Did you know you could sponsor Nerd and Tie? That's right. Just go to GoFundMe.com/NerdandTie and help contribute towards our GoFundMe, hence the URL.
On this Fortnite's episode of Nerd and Tie, the SAG-AFTRA video game voice actor strike has officially begun. Director Tim Miller has left Deadpool due to creative differences. Donald Glover is going to be the young Lando Calrissian in a canceled Star Wars film. Let me talk about Shin Godzilla. We have the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 and Logan trailers. And me and Nick went to a couple of conventions this weekend. All that along with your mail. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Nerd and Tie.
Woohoo!
Yeah, there we go.
What up?
Good Fortnite, everybody. Thank you for joining us, as always, as you do every other week here on Nerd and Tie. I am one of your hosts, Fur Stirs. Along with me, as always, is the very tall standing Trey Dorn.
I do claim to be.
And the, is he there? Better look quick before he vanishes, Nick Azumi.
I didn't know I was a speedster, but I'm happy to be a speedster.
He is like the wind. Ineffable and impossible to grasp.
It's been a while since I took a little break in between because I don't have television. I have Netflix, and so I finally started watching season 2 of The Flash.
Good times.
Well, I mean, that's been up on Netflix for a while.
Yeah, I know. I just don't have a lot of time to watch TV, but
and you know that you could watch the current season for free on the CW app, right?
I don't have the CW app, Trey.
It's free,
right? It's literally a free app.
It's literally free.
I don't have time to watch TV. Like, it doesn't happen. But I finally do now a little more than I used to. So I've been watching it. Speaking of speedsters, that's me and my delayed pop culture report.
You've been keeping up with Supergirl, though, right?
Yeah.
On the CW app?
Not on the CW app.
For free?
I do end up getting over to my parents because I do laundry over at my parents because they don't charge me to use their washing machines and stuff. I just have to show up with my own detergent and everything. So for the 3 hours that I'm there doing laundry on my days off, I am catching up on everything.
I just want to say, so the CW app is fully functional on Roku, which is much better than the old CW Seed app. But the one thing that drives me nuts about it is that every single time I ever play an episode, I have to manually turn off closed captioning on the Roku version. It doesn't happen on the iOS app. It doesn't happen on the Android app. Just the Roku app, I have to manually turn off closed captions every single time I watch any episode of anything. There's no setting to turn it off. It's so frustrating.
I have just been using Chromecast, and I have not had that problem.
Well, yeah, no, it just seems to be exclusively a problem with the Roku app. I'm thankful that the app exists, even if I'm watching 3 times the amount of commercials I used to watch on Hulu. But, I'm thankful for the app, but it is that one little annoying thing at the beginning of every episode. I have to go into options, disable closed captions.
We don't even need the CW app be honest here. So all the CW shows are are exclusive to Netflix now. Why can't they work out something with Netflix where they put the episode up right away? Wouldn't that be a smart thing to do
They used to have a contract like that with CBS years and years and years ago, before CBS started putting shows up on their own website. But the problem is that Netflix wants to, whenever they put anything out, wants to be able to put out the whole season of something. They want to be able to batch episodes. They don't want it's stacking is what they want. They don't want just the latest episode and that's it. And so that's why, I'm glad the CW, at least when they pulled from Hulu, put out an app, because I watch 8 to 9 CW shows. So it is literally the network I watch the most. That's why I said this when they were pulling from Hulu, that if CBS All Access added the CW content, that would actually get me to pay for it, because I watch I use the CW app almost as much as I use Hulu this season.
Mm-hmm.
And
I use the CW app more than I use Hulu.
So we here at Nerd and Tie endorse the CW app.
Oh, except for Fur, who's afraid of it.
Well, I don't have a lot of space on my phone.
Fur does not 70%
of my phone are pictures of my daughter. Like, I'm not going
to
get rid of that stuff
dare
for CW app.
Defy.
Anyways, we got a lot to talk about this week, guys. Of course, it was up until Friday. It was a relatively slow news cycle for us here at Nerd and Tie. Speaking of Daring to Defy, yes. on Friday, it was announced after some failed negotiations that the Screen Actors Guild, American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, has officially commenced a strike for video game voice actors, which are a part of that that part of SAG. This also covers
stunt and mocap actors too.
Yeah, all are included. Basically, this is a big deal because it's going to affect production of video games from publishers like Activision, EA, Warner Brothers, Take-Two, Disney, I think, is included in all that. All the really big hitters for video game publishing are going to be affected by this until an agreement is reached between the publishers and the voice actors union. And I can't say that I blame the voice actors for wanting a little bit more than what they're getting, because in the past few years, video games have been making just as much, if not more, money than most movies.
Yeah, no, it's
it's
the video game. The industry's been working off of contract styles that are 10 years out of date. And these negotiations have been going on for 2 years, and they threatened to do this strike a year ago, back September 2015, but they chose not to strike and went back to the negotiating table. But the fact is that this has been 2 years of just complete failed negotiations, and the video game management has publicly said, "Oh, well, they didn't let us respond to their plan." But the fact is that this is again 2 years. Of failed negotiations. So I don't blame the SAG-AFTRA members for striking. I think it's exactly what they have to do. And it's going to affect any game put out by... There's a list of publishers, and we have those on our website, but that are specifically being the strike is against, because not all studios use union member actors. But it's going to affect any games, I think, that have been in development since February of 2015. From the studios, so this is pretty big.
Strikes can take a long time, guys. Right out here in the Midwest, at least. I mean, this is a union related thing. I mean, a strike of nurses just wrapped up after about 2 months of being on strike, and it took the governor of Minnesota stepping in and saying, get a deal done before a deal was actually done. And even then, nobody was really happy with the deal. So these strikes can take a long time if people are not willing to negotiate or budge. And usually I'm on the side of the union. And as I am in this case, I think unions are still very important in today's day and age. So more power to the voice actors for sticking to their guns on this one, as it were.
So what I'm understanding, and I haven't gotten a whole lot of chance to read into it as much as I would have liked to, because I'm on my sixth, speaking of bad work conditions, I'm on my sixth consecutive week of 6 day work weeks. But some of this is the stuff that has always bothered me. Like, these actors will get paid for the initial product, but then there are no royalties after that. Like, it's just, you could, and some of the, you have these characters, or these actors who become synonymous with these characters, and they're making next to nothing off of it. You know, they put in the work, and it's...
Well, and I think...
It's messed up.
I think a lot of the problem, too, is that a lot of the stuff that SAG-AFTRA is asking for is safety-related. Like, with especially with, the stunts and the mocap part of this has a lot to do with... proper safety training on hand, and where a lot of these video game studios just don't have it. And also, frankly, voice actors are doing are going through paces and having to do vocal work without breaks. That's very damaging to their voices. And so I think that that's like thing. Obviously, that there are issues with royalties that would be nice to sort out. But I think that the larger issue I know in the industry is just frankly the safety concerns for performers. And that's like if it had just been a royalty issue, like I know that's part of it. And obviously they want that. But I think if it had just been a royalty issue, they wouldn't have struck. You know what I mean?
And it's no, I know what you mean. It's just, but yeah, like what you're getting at there, Trey, like these voice actors in general just don't get treated well in a lot of these industries. Like you hear stories from people, especially in the video game industry, talking about how they get brought in and told, oh, no one's going to care about the voice work anyway.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing like showing up to a job where someone tells you what you're doing is worthless and then they overwork you. They make you stress your voice, which is your meal ticket. You know, it's the only thing you've got. And like just it's mistreatment, plain and simple.
Oh, absolutely no disagreement. It's
so but. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's more power. Like we said to the voice actors on this, we're with you guys. Good luck, union.
Amen.
Speaking of some conflict, Nick.
Looking over at some disagreements. Deadpool, one of the biggest, one of the most ridiculous hit movies of the year, an R-rated superhero movie. It kicked all sorts of butt at the box office. It totally blew away my expectations as a Deadpool fan that they actually got the character who I love from the comics onto the screen. And, I mean, no one can deny Ryan Reynolds did an amazing job, but a lot of people will give a lot of credit to director Tim Miller, who just, you know, was there for that original test footage and stuck with this project along with Reynolds for the long haul. Well, whatever happens with Deadpool 2, which we know we're getting, it's not going to reflect Tim Miller's vision because he is leaving the movie due to a quote creative disagreement with Mr. Reynolds.
Yeah.
So that's big.
Yeah, that's huge. It's
Now it should be noted that Tim Miller says that everybody's still on good terms. It's not like him and Ryan Reynolds got into a huge fight on set and he just stormed out or anything. Of course, Ryan Reynolds is a producer for the Deadpool films. He's credited as a producer for number one, and he's going to be for number two as well. But it makes you wonder how bad it could have gotten that Tim Miller said, I can't work like this.
Well, really what it comes down to is that there's a massive disagreement between Tim Miller and Ryan Reynolds about the direction of Deadpool 2. And this whole thing came to the head with the casting of Kyle Chandler as Cable, where Miller really wanted to cast Kyle Chandler as Cable, but Ryan Reynolds didn't. And as Ryan Reynolds has casting approval on the film, the studio sided obviously with Reynolds because that's part of Reynolds' current contract.
It's, you know, you can, if you have a disagreement with the staff, it's way easier to lose the people behind the camera than the people in front of it. Well, frankly.
Yeah. That okay, so the issue is that Ryan Reynolds Tim Miller wanted to take the film in a new direction, wanted it to be hyper stylized, while Ryan Reynolds wanted to keep it in the same kind of tone as the first movie. And it shouldn't be understood. While Tim Miller was very important in the development of the first Deadpool movie, Ryan Reynolds was heavily involved in the tone of the film as well. So
right.
It's in that production of the first movie. So the fact is,
was Reynolds' passion project, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And so really what it comes down to is the fact that Tim Miller and Ryan Reynolds are the two creative driving forces behind the first Deadpool, really had fundamentally different ideas about which way to take the second film. And so it comes down to that. And you're exactly right, Nick. It's not like it's much easier to hire a new director than it is to recast your star in the sequel.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when that star's contract specifically says he gets casting approval. And Tim Miller, although he was helping develop the sequel, hadn't formally signed like a contract to be the director yet. Everyone assumed he was going to be.
Yeah.
He was. It was pretty much, you know, a given that he was going to be the director, but because there wasn't, Ryan Reynolds has a contract, Tim Miller doesn't.
Well, and I'll be honest, do you think it's going to be that difficult to find a new director to direct the sequel to a movie that made just about every dollar that ever existed?
Finding a director isn't going to be hard, but finding a director who can do it right is, I think.
Although, to be fair, it's easier to match an established tone than invent the tone.
This is true.
So as long as it's a good director who can understand the language behind the first film and the visuals, then I think that... I mean, you have to remember a lot of the way that that film ended up was they did different cuts of that film that where the story order was completely different. They did a version of Deadpool where everything was in like order of
in sequence.
Like, of its point in their continuity. So in sequence. They did a version that was apparently terrible. So I mean it's like they were experimenting with this film all the way down to the wire. You know.
Mm.
And so I think that it's sad to see that the two of them couldn't come to an agreement on the direction of the film, but I think that, honestly, I don't want the version that Tim Miller seems to have been, like, going for. You know what I mean? Like, when I want Deadpool 2, I want, like,
Deadpool... I'd like more of that first one.
2,
yeah.
Yeah, right.
A continuation it's... instead of a completely different direction.
Right. And so it's, like... Yeah, that's what it really comes down to, is that, frankly, we're talking about a comic book movie, and comic books are narratives that are told in installments, and I want the next installment. And when you pick up a comic book, if the second issue is vastly different from the first issue, you get a little annoyed because you were sold on that first one.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you know, it's the second installment, and we want it to be in the same tone as the first installment, because that's why we liked it. For better or for worse, that is the entire benefit of a sequel. And mm-hmm. if we lose that, we lose the benefit of a sequel.
You're here.
It'll be interesting to see where it goes. I'm confident they'll keep things together, and I'm confident Reynolds won't let this Wolverine Origins again. So
yeah. Although we will talk about Wolverine later in this episode, much later, but. Before we talk about Wolverine, why don't we talk, and speaking of never-ending franchises with continuous installments with desired nostalgia for the tone of the previous ones, let's talk about Lando Calrissian. And the second anthology film, which is still yet to have a title, which is going to be based around young Han Solo. You know, because it's after Episode 8, we know that in 2018 we're going to get another anthology movie, and that will of course be the young Han Solo film, which is starring what's his name, Alden Ehrenreich. Am I saying that right?
Probably.
Very German. he's gonna be playing Han Solo, but
Han Solo.
Now one of the major people in the history of Han Solo is the one person who calls him Han Solo, and that is of course Lando Calrissian. And the question
owned the Millennium Falcon, which is why I'm super excited to see Donald Glover flying around in the...
You see, you spoiled the sentence.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was about to say, and we were wondering if Lando was going to show up, and now we know he is, and we know Donald Glover's going to play him. Building up, man. Building up.
I'm just too excited, man. I don't want to wait anymore. This is what made me get on board for this, like, Solo Han...
I didn't give a crap about Little Han Solo until this was announced.
Yeah.
Because, frankly, what's there to... What we're supposed to get out of Episode 4 is that up until that point, he was a total asshole. I mean, really, that's it. Like, great, I get a movie about this asshole.
Yeah.
But...
And I wonder if we're going to see that wife they introduced in the comics.
But
Lando Calrissian, not only going to be there, he's going to be Donald motherfucking Glover. Oh my God, I love Donald Glover so much.
Dude, third. I mean, you guys like him. You guys are both huge Community fans. I haven't really watched as much Community as you two. I'm not like as invested in it. But I love him as Childish Gambino.
Well, yeah,
I love
all the stuff he
puts out.
His rap career, obviously. But he's done other things. Like, he was in The Martian. He was in, you know, he's been in some other films.
His stand-up's really good.
Yeah. No, his stand-up is fantastic, but he has an acting range where he can go, you know, the full spectrum, and I think it's going to be amazing. You know, when I first heard it, I actually my first thought was, is he young enough to play a young Lando? And then I looked up how old Billy Dee Williams was when he made Empire, and I was like, holy crap.
He was in Billy his, like, Dee Williams 40s at that was, point,
yeah,
wasn't he?
He was not a young man. When he made, he...
Can we just get a follow-up? Like, I just want to see now at this point Donald Glover doing Colt 45 commercials.
I don't know about that. I just love the idea of... I almost wonder, could we just nix the young Han Solo thing and just have Donald Glover as Lando?
Can we just
Lando?
Get a Lando Calrissian movie?
I would prefer that in so many...
Hey, unless they made it like a buddy action film.
God, I hope.
Like Lethal Weapon in space. But well, like real Lethal Weapon, not that new Lethal Weapon with Damon Wayans.
But it's obvious that
we've got a Glover. He's not related, but
it's obvious these two have a long history together, and like their relationship really did feel like it was a buddy like action type thing when we met them and when we met Lando and Empire Strikes Back. So that might be what we get out of this, which I can only hope, because my God, I mean, Rogue One is going to be really, really dark and violent. And I kind of want I mean, it's not going to be super lighthearted, but it'd be really nice to see a buddy style movie with these two working together.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I mean, like, we're going to get Donald Glover in both the young Han Solo movie and in Spider-Man Homecoming. He's playing a part. So I'm super excited. And man, one of these days I should watch Atlanta.
Dude, Atlanta's phenomenal.
I don't have FX. So
the fact that they fit all of that into 30 minute episodes is incredible to me. You got, they actually, they're streaming the first couple episodes on the FX website.
I should check that out.
At least they were as of last week. I don't know if they are anymore, but
nice.
If they are, you need to watch it, because he's great. Bye. Everything, all of his careers kind of come together in this show.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is it took forever for Atlanta to come to screen, because he left Community during season 5 to make Atlanta, and that deal was in place, and it took him forever to write it. So it's I don't know, Donald Glover. I just want to see more Donald Glover. Donald Glover is just so phenomenally talented, even if he did for a while accidentally have the Twitter handle Don Glover, or if you parse it differently, Dong Lover. he changed that a long time ago, but he did accidentally have Dong Lover as his Twitter handle for a while.
That's terrible and kind of great.
No, but Donald Glover is probably one of the funniest people on earth. He's insanely talented, and the idea that we get to watch him play an iconic role like Lando Calrissian.
Mm-hmm.
Booyah.
Yeah, that's stellar casting.
And we can finally
really
answer the question, was Han Solo wearing Lando's clothes, or was Lando wearing Han Solo's clothes?
Indeed. I want to know that one.
Because that's the question, is that were they old clothes of Lando's left on the Millennium Falcon that Han started wearing, or did Lando start wearing Han's old clothes in Jedi? I need to know.
I never noticed that before.
That has always bothered me. Every time I get to the end of Empire, that bothers the hell out of me. I'm like, what? Really? That seems in bad taste.
I mean, obviously Lando upgraded in the wardrobe department. He's got a freaking cape.
Well, no, but it's like in Jedi, man. It's when Lando flies when Lando Calrissian flies. I keep accidentally saying Lando because I'm stupid Babylon 5 in my brain, but Lando...
And at the very end of Empire.
He's wearing it at the end of Empire? I'd have to go... I'm going to
have to
go back and look.
Right at the end of Empire. That's why it's always bothered me, as I'm like, Han might be dead. That's in really bad taste, dude.
Well, I think he figures he's getting the ship, too.
Oh, okay, well...
You know, if Han's dead or something. He just lost a whole city.
That's...
The man just lost a city.
That's what you get when you sell out your city to space fascists. That happened.
Really just want to know what happened to the guy with the cyborg implants in his head, like that guy. I know he's got a name, and I know some Star Wars fan is going to be able to write in and tell me his entire backstory.
Every Star Wars character has a name, because you got to put something on the action figure box.
But I'm just saying he's prominently featured as the best makeup piece on that whole thing, but I don't know what happened to him if he made it out. And now that the EU's not canon anymore, you guys can't tell me anyways. We still don't know what happened to the guy who had that ice cream maker, though. I'm sorry, his data core.
Yeah, come on. Don't ruin.
I kind of want to look that up.
So there's this one guy who's running through with like this quote unquote data core, and it's an ice cream maker. It's a specific model ice cream maker, and so at conventions there have been running of the ice cream makers where people cosplay as this guy with their ice cream makers and just run down a hallway with them.
My head hurts now.
Standalone Star Wars movie about ice cream maker guy.
Everybody's gonna get one.
Hey, you know what?
Eventually. Come on, Moma Nadon. Looking forward to his movie. That's gonna be the best.
I'm just waiting for Sarlacc the musical.
But why was Moma Nadon the head guy sitting drinking in the middle of the afternoon in Mos Eisley? I want to know what brought him to that bar. It's probably a great story.
I want to know about Planet of the Wolf
Jedi for Hire.
I just want to know about the death stick trade and about what marketing genius called the drug that. That's just all I'm saying.
So you're saying it'll kill me? Yeah, probably. I'll take 20.
Yeah, like, who calls your... Like, real drugs have names like, you know, ecstasy or, you know, like... The worst, you get something like crack, you know, or, you know, meth. You don't call it, like, death. You know, like, no one wants to take death. That just sounds like a terrible idea. Hey, you want to have some fun? Sure. This is a great party. Let's take a party. Okay, how about suicide? No one's going to take that drug. That's just a terrible idea. Here, have some kill yourself. What? Death sticks. George Lucas.
Yeah, well, episode 2 isn't exactly the height of writing in Star Wars. Let's be honest here.
God damn it. And then I forget the name of the drug dealer, but he had some ridiculous name. That was like, just look him up. The guy who was selling who tried to sell death sticks to Obi-Wan. Like, he's got like this ridiculous name, like, that is so like, it's Dickensian in its descriptiveness. Like, he makes Dickens look subtle.
Dear God. That shouldn't even be possible.
Yeah, no. Here, let me look it up at Wikipedia.
I'm looking up right now. Ilan Celsabagno.
Oh, my God.
Wikipedia has him called Sleazebagino.
Yeah, Sleazebagino is his original name.
Ilan Sleazebagino.
Oh, man.
He's going to go home and hang out with his arsonist roommate, Tyler Matchstick Setter.
Yeah, like, Ilan Celsabagino is called... The Celsabagino is what some writer later came up with to try to, like, dial it back from the Sleazebagino that George Lucas called him in the script.
Dear God.
Oh, here's this guy. He just got out of jail. He's a slasher. Please welcome to the room, Jeff Stab Throatman.
Oh, dear God.
Oh, so, yeah, it was like a Clone Wars writer who fixed the guy's name. Like,
I want a unique standalone film for Sleazebagino.
I Sleazebagino, think
the musical. Death sticks, come buy my death sticks.
You want to buy a death stick?
Can I just say that the Clone Wars writers deserve a lot of credit for going back and taking what was essentially trash and making it, you know, at least watchable, because they eventually did. I mean, well, think about it. Think about having that job. All right, you have to write Star Wars. Okay, that could be fun. It completely during the prequels. Really?
The prequels are those movies that you watch once because you have to acknowledge that they're part of the continuity, but then you try to, like, forget about.
Yeah, but, I mean, like, to the credit of the Clone Wars writers, eventually they make Anakin into a character that you could potentially see people liking. Like, you know...
That's
you
impossible.
Oh, no, Zaku pilot whose English dialogue was okayed by Yoshiyuki Tomino. It is possible.
Dear Lord. Oh. Well, you know what?
It is possible.
You know what? So we're all excited about Donald Glover, right, though?
Hooray, we are. We are.
That's what we were talking about.
That's an understatement.
Yeah, hooray Donald Glover, hooray Lando Calrissian, and now this Star Wars... You know, it's like I was always hyped up about Rogue One because I thought it would be a really cool story once I knew what it was. And so but now I'm finally getting hyped for the Han Solo movie, which was the movie I didn't care about. So,
Yeah, I did not give two craps about it until really the Donald Glover announcement. Yeah.
So yeah, but you know what? I think it's time we moved on, and I think it's time we let Nick talk about Shin Godzilla.
Man. So yeah, just this last week, Funimation had finally got its screenings for Shin Godzilla, which ditched the Godzilla Resurgence title that Toho was using for the international release, which is weird.
I think Shin Godzilla is a better title.
I like it more. I just want to know why they even bothered coming up with the other title in the first place.
I think Toho came up with the title on their own, and then the American distributors were like, no.
The alternate title doesn't even make any sense because Shin Godzilla is a complete reboot, which is actually unprecedented for Japanese Godzilla films.
I had
the pleasure of getting to see one of the screenings, which were extremely limited. Now, they did extend the run for another weekend, from what I understand, but most theaters that were showing it for 3 days only. A lot of them did not have, and while it was supposed to be over a weekend, most of them didn't have any Saturday or Sunday showings. And for those 3 days only, it was one screening per each of those days. So, we were very lucky. My wife and I got tickets because for her birthday. So that was exciting. Finally got to see a Godzilla film in theaters in Japanese with the subtitles for the first time in my life. Actually, this was the first Japanese Godzilla film I've seen in theaters, which was really exciting.
Yeah, I've never seen one in a theater.
It's safe to say this is, as I said on the text review on the site, this is probably Hideaki Anno's best film.
Really?
This is, I think so. I also will go far as to say that this is the first actually great Godzilla film since 1954.
Wow.
That is to say, like, now all of the Godzilla movies, I think, have something entertaining, or they're, like, very good B movies, something fun like that. This movie is actually well written. The camera work is interesting. The cast are really stonking good. There's a powerful script. There's some biting social commentary, a lot of which I'm pretty sure I missed because I'm not Japanese.
There's also some literal biting by Godzilla.
Yes, the monster itself is something out of nightmares, and while, as per usual with Godzilla movies, this new version of Godzilla isn't on screen all the time, his presence is always felt. This is a weird movie because it's completely from the perspective of politicians. It's not like average people, it's not like researchers, it's not even the military, it's politicians. And how would you react if just one day here in 2016, some massive monster made landfall in Tokyo Bay, and how would they deal with that? And that's not just how do you deal with the monster, that's how do you deal with the bureaucracy that comes with being the Japanese government. Like, seriously, you have this situation where it's like, all right, I mean, some people, I'm going to be the first to admit, I know some people are going to find big chunks of this movie boring if you're not, especially if you're not into, like, political movies, because there is a lot of juxtaposition of these sterile government offices and the chaos going on outside. But you have these great scenes that are just talking about the weirdness that is Japanese politics with, all right, we need to get the strategic self-defense force out there. Wait a minute, according to this treaty, we can't use the strategic self-defense force unless this is an invasion by a foreign power. That's a semantic game. This is a foreign power, even if it is a monster. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
That is so true. I hadn't thought about that.
But it works. It works really well. And on top of that, I got to see two of the actors from the abysmal Attack on Titan movies delivering great performances.
So it's the film and not the actors is what you're saying.
Yeah, it was definitely, it was the movie, it was the script. The cast, the two that carried over, who were respectively the main actor is the same one who played Shikishima, the original character for the Attack on Titan film. And the leading lady played Hans, who was the Hanji character.
Ah, gotcha.
And it was really weird because she's very... She's a very glamorous character in this movie, as opposed to how purposefully androgynous they made Hanji.
Right, because it's...
So that really took me aback. She is probably the closest to a weak link that the cast has, and it's not even that she delivers a bad performance. It's that the character she's playing is the half-Japanese daughter of a United States senator. And her English is phenomenal.
Oh, okay.
Like, there's no problem with her English. It's just that her accent betrays that there's no way that is her first language.
Right.
There is no way in hell that is her first language. So when you actually keep giving the character dialogue like, oh, I've never been to Japan before, it's a little odd. And like, I'm like back and constantly talking about America. It's really off-putting that her Japanese accent is very thick, and she's clearly much more comfortable with her lines that are in Japanese. But, minor. The monster itself is something out of nightmares. I know some fans are going to be perturbed by Anno's creative changes. Godzilla metamorphoses in this movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When he makes landfall, he's this... two-legged, awful pink, or awful, like, tan thing with blood spurting from its gills and no arms. And it just kind of lurches forward, or not even lurches, it runs forward, and that's all it wants to do is continue forward. It has a second form that's just creepy looking, and then the final form, which I talked about a little bit on the site, the horrible burned-looking form, was absolutely, it was just a terror bringer. There's a scene where it decimates an entire city block in Tokyo, and it was breathtaking in just the apocalyptic levels of destruction this thing was bringing out. Really scary monster. It could not be any more different from the 2014 one. Where 2014 Godzilla is intelligent and heroic. This thing is animalistic and destructive.
So in other words, where Legendary brought us the hero Godzilla that many of us grew up with, this brings back the terrifying Godzilla that hasn't really been seen since the first movie.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it's effectively the version of Godzilla that's been forgotten by the franchise.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think, to be fair, I don't think you could build an entire franchise on that destructive Godzilla. I don't think you could have done this many movies about that character. But it was cool to see a reimagining of that version of Godzilla.
I'm really excited to see this.
I think you'll enjoy it. Like I said, the biggest problems that it's going to have is I would not hold it against people if they get bored during the long political discussion scenes.
I have a degree in political science. I'll be fine.
I enjoyed them for what they were. I I think of any Godzilla movie, my biggest warning for anyone is don't take the kids. Because even if you see it in English, I think little kids would be bored by the political scenes and scared by the monster scenes. Like, really, the monster is just really creepy and awful and scary. Like, you just... Like, I said, to give an idea of just how animalistic it is, that first form, the blood from the gill spurting form, it's just going forward. And eventually it just crashes headlong into an apartment. And you see people inside trying to get out. And the monster doesn't try to move around it. It just kind of crawls up. It, like, slams into the apartment a couple times until it kind of crawls on top of it and crushes the apartment building under it so it can continue going forward.
Wow.
That's a
dumb monster. No.
it kind of is, but then at the same time, it's constantly evolving. Like, Godzilla's attack pattern is a countermeasure for what's around it.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, there's stuff in the way. Got to get maybe taller, put more emphasis on the hind legs. Okay, there's things attacking, a long-range weapon. There's things attacking from above, a weapon from the back. It's, yeah, like, every time you think you have its number, it escalates and does something even worse than what it could do before.
That's really cool. Obviously, I don't want to, you know, spoil it any more than we have.
Right.
But
yeah,
I'm glad that, you know, I'm really glad that they stuck with the Shin Godzilla name, because Godzilla Resurgence was just kind of a dumb title, because, like, and while it's true that Shin Godzilla can mean true Godzilla, the fact that it also means, like, Death Godzilla is a much more apropos title than, say, Godzilla Resurgence, because Godzilla Resurgence feels more like it's trying to illegitimize the 2014 Godzilla.
Yeah, and I don't like that, because 2014, again, as much as I was annoyed by it, it's not a bad movie, and these are both valid interpretations of Godzilla
and
as
I think,
a character.
And I think, if I recall correctly, the parts of Godzilla 2014 Godzilla you didn't like didn't really have much to do with the monster. You know what I mean?
They had everything to do with the bad script.
Yeah.
I mean,
and with the human scenes.
Yeah, the human scenes that were just really boring, which I didn't feel in this movie. I liked the humans.
Yeah,
I didn't want bad things to happen to them.
Yeah, so it's I think that it's good that that Toho said, "Hey, look, that American Godzilla film was really popular. We should make another one." And I'm glad it turned out well.
I'm glad they made it something very different. I think Hideaki Anno has something to be very proud of. And I hope he gets, I hope his spirits get raised enough that he can get back to work on his little Evangelion project.
Yeah, he's very good at making things full of both horror and boringness. So I think that just moments of absolute stillness interspersed with moments of nightmare fuel. So I think that it was the right choice.
It was a really good directorial choice.
So, moving on to more cheerful things. And speaking of, you know, follow-ups to films that came out in 2014. Because Guardians of the Galaxy came out in 2014, didn't it? I'm not crazy.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
It was 2014, yep.
Yep.
I thought it was a 2015, but no, it was in fact 2014.
We now have our first teaser trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Woo!
And it is not a lot of information beyond, hey, look, it's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Woohoo!
Yes. Hooked on a feeling some more, and a couple of stingers. There was the great joke of Drax asking, if Peter wants a hug.
And then he says no, and then Drax, like, still hugs him. I know very little was given to us in this film besides getting to see what Baby Groot looks like. And, you know.
And his little outfit.
Yeah.
I didn't expect him to have a little outfit, but.
It's adorable.
I'm totally cool with it.
Yeah. And it's just. It looks like exactly what we want out of the film when it comes out in May.
Yeah, it's already coming up quick. Months from now.
Guardians,
right?
Of the Galaxy, I love it so much. It's like it's in the Marvel shared universe, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but it's really it's just this slice of space opera thrown in there.
It's different. It's fun. I mean, like, we haven't... I can't... You know, the last movie... The movie we're getting that's leading into Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is going to be Doctor Strange. And while it's going to look visually pleasing and stuff, I can guarantee you it's not going to be a fun romp through, like, different dimensions. Like, it's not going to be
movie. It's Doctor Strange, so it's going to be a darker, you know, film. And so getting Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, it looks like, you know, obviously I think, you know...
It looks like what we all wanted, which was more Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right. We wanted the next story with these characters and with James Gunn still directing and, you know, the same creative team behind this one and pretty much, you know, being given the creative freedom that they really, you know, they got the first time around because, again, you know, they're so restricted in rights for the cosmic characters about who they can use and who they can't use that they're pretty much left to invent their own stuff while working in a loose framework. And especially since this next film is going to all be about, like, not about Thanos, but about, you know, the search for... Star-Lord's father and finding out about his own backstory and, like, a self-discovery in this world. It, like, even though it's taking place in the same universe that, like, obviously the Infinity War stuff is going to be, we've been leading up to since the beginning of the franchise, because, you know, it's if everything built to Avengers, but Avengers, I mean, actually, no, it's because we've been building towards Infinity War starting with Captain America, the first Avenger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the fact is that, like, that and Thor, you know, obviously both started bringing us towards Infinity War. And so even though we're playing in the same playground and the first Guardians of the Galaxy also was building towards Infinity War, I think it's going to be just fun to see a nice, like, this movie's not going to be building towards that. This movie is going to be just these characters, exploring these characters, growing them, and moving them forward. And so I'm... Like, even though we've only gotten, like, you know, just, like, a minute and a half of footage of this, and even out of that minute and a half, like, 30 seconds of that was titles on black, like, that effectively minute of footage we got was, like, just enough to, like, oh, my God, I'm so excited about this movie.
We get to catch up. What sold Guardians of the Galaxy in the first place was that we all got to meet some really great characters, and now we get to spend more time with them.
Yeah.
So it's hard to not be jazzed.
And while we're jazzed for a very fun movie, what we're going to be getting with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, the other trailer we got this week, great, is going to be decidedly less of a fun popcorn flick and much more of a dark, reflective film. As we finally got the trailer for Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart's last go round in the Marvel universe, at least in the X-Men universe, with the Logan trailer, we get to see an aged Professor X and an aged Logan. Of course, after we find out a lot of different weakness stuff from the Wolverine, which came out in was that 2014 also?
No, I think that was 2013.
Is that 2013?
I'll Google it.
But we got a
2013. Nick was right.
We got a beautiful trailer for this movie, featuring, of course, Johnny Cash's rendition of "Hurt" by Nine Inch Nails, which I couldn't have picked a more perfect song for the end of Wolverine, really.
As far as I think the director actually insisted that he be able to use that song in the trailer.
I think we're going to probably get it as an end credit song too. I wouldn't be shocked if it happened. But we got a lot of other stuff in the movie. It's obvious, or in the trailer, it's obvious that they're going to take advantage of that R rating that they've got permission to use after the success of Deadpool. Of course, it's going to be a much different R rating than Deadpool's R rating was.
Yeah.
But we also got to see a glimpse of X-23.
Yeah, or what we're presuming is X-23.
I'd be shocked if it's not.
Well, the only reason why it might not specifically be X-23 is if they want to use that character in the rest of the franchise, and it looks like this is going to be taking place much later in the timeline.
Very post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, so it may be fully intended that this is an X-23-like character, but they may not use that term in the film so they can save it for, you know, the rest of the franchise, because Fox has obviously got to think past.
Although I did just look this up 3 hours ago on a Comic Book Report, the Logan's Instagram page posted a picture of Daphne Keene, who's playing this young girl, with the caption "Laura." Of course, Laura Kinney is the identity of X-23. So we might have just gotten our confirmation on that as little as 3 hours ago.
Okay. Cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's so, like, I'm really hyped about this film because one of the things that, like, I haven't been really a reader of Wolverine for the last 15 years, but I was a big reader in the 90s and the early 2000s, and I have boxes and boxes of Wolverine and X-Men comics to prove that. But one of the core parts of the character that I always appreciated was, and that I liked, was not, like, there are people who like Wolverine because he's, quote-unquote, the best at what he does. But the best of what he does is look after young kids, because
he's the best babysitter of the X-Men.
Like if Batman likes to take in orphan boys who look like him, Wolverine likes to take in orphan young women. It's like, I mean, be it, you know, in the comics, he had a long history with both Kitty Pryde and then with Jubilee, Jubilee being the more prominent of the two, that relationship. Being a mentor, and then we saw that part of the character in 2000s, the first movie X-Men, with his relationship with Rogue. But Wolverine always in the comics had this like strong need to take care of other people, and there are other characters who he like had that sort of relationship in a shorter term. But
let's say a little bit with Armor during Joss Whedon's run.
Yeah, I haven't read Joss Whedon's run, so I don't want to comment on that. But it's a persistent trait of the character, and so it's like that nurturing core, that need to like take care of other people, while and in part due to his own personal pain and kind of like, there are two defining traits of the character that make him interesting to me, and that is kind of the fact that he's in kind of a constant state of emotional pain, and the fact that he always feels the need to take care of people who he thinks are on their own. And those two things, like, were always what made him interesting. But in the film franchise, we really haven't gotten that. Like, in 2000's X-Men, we got that. It was very good in that film. But it kind of faded out and I'm not saying that the elements of the character that they chose to show in other X-Men films weren't genuinely a part of who the character was. Like, I think that the Wolverine in 2013 really captured a very specific moment in the 80s with the character. You know what I mean? Like, it's that Chris Claremont run, I think, and actually Frank Miller's version of Wolverine is very clearly in there. And so I don't want to, like,
the Wolverine is the Claremont Miller Wolverine movie.
Yeah, I liked that movie because of that. But the fact is that this has been the part of the character that's been absent for me is that part that made me a dedicated reader back in the day. Because frankly, the overblown, like, Invincible fighting part of it is boring. Like, and that's, I stopped reading because the comics started focusing on that in the early 2000s, and so I stopped collecting Wolverine solo series back then. Mm-hmm. And it's my fault for not checking back in as time went by. But also, it's why, like, in kind of the last run with the original Wolverine character in the comics before his death, when he showed up in Ms. Marvel for an issue, like, I loved his, like, interactions with Kamala Khan that whole issue.
Yeah, that was a really good issue.
And so, like, the fact that we get to see that in a movie, we get to see sad, depressed Wolverine who is taking care of a young orphan girl, like, oh my god, like, that's the Wolverine I want to watch for, like, 2 hours on screen.
Now, before we move on to our next story, because I know, Trey, you wanted to catch The Walking Dead, which comes on in about 17 minutes.
If I don't watch it when it airs, it's going to be all spoiled for me. I don't want to.
but a quick question. Do you think it's, I mean, even from the trailer, it looks like it's going to deviate from the Old Man Logan storyline we all thought we were going to get.
Well, they can't do straight up Old Man Logan, because Hulk incest is one of the main plot points
of
that.
But, I guess what I'm going to ask you two, I know my answer, is how much are all of us going to cry at the end of this movie as we see Hugh Jackman leave this role?
I don't know. I cried during the trailer.
Same, right? Actually,
I can't. It's impossible for me to hear Johnny Cash's cover of that song without crying. I actually am concerned about any human being who can hear that cover and not cry a little bit.
I was just thinking about how weird it is that, I mean, take a moment to consider that Hugh Jackman has been playing this character since the year 2000. We have had the same Wolverine, one actor playing Wolverine, for more than a decade.
Even through for 16 reboots.
16, yeah. Yeah.
Which is nuts, because usually, like, even with X-Men First Class, you know, people are like, oh, how is anybody going to replace Patrick Stewart? And then that happened, and we're like, okay, he's pretty good. McAvoy's pretty good. I guess we'll take it. But, I mean, they're not going to be able to create a new Wolverine character for a very long time.
They're going to have to let it rest before they bring back, you know.
Yeah.
And he'll have to be the same character.
This is... Yeah, I don't think anyone has been so synonymous with with one superhero since Christopher Reeve, really.
Which is just so weird, because Hugh Jackman's like a foot taller than Logan is supposed to be.
And, right, and we all accept that. We've gotten to the point where we all accept that. And look, if they do cast short Wolverine in the future, you know what the first thing out of our mouths are going to be when they announce a casting for a new Wolverine in, you know, 10 years' time? We're going to say that guy's too short.
No, you know what? Here's the thing. Back in the first X-Men movie, you go back and watch that, they were putting everyone else up on Apple boxes to make them taller than Hugh Jackman. And mm-hmm. in the first two X-Men movies, they were doing that the whole time. It was X-Men 3 where they like just suddenly Wolverine was a head over everybody. Like a head taller than everybody. Like they did spend the first two movies putting everyone else up on Apple boxes when they shared scenes with Hugh Jackman.
Thanks, Brett Ratner.
Brett Ratner ruined it, because once they let everyone else stand on the ground next to Hugh Jackman, they just gave up.
Hey, there's a lot of reasons he ruined it, and a lot of them have nothing to do with Apple boxes. I'll say that.
Apple boxes.
Ugh.
It starts with the Apple boxes. So yeah, Logan comes out, I believe, May 3rd, 2017.
March 3rd,
2017. A lot of superhero movies coming out in a row that early next year.
So, Nick, what did you do this weekend?
Yeah, well, Nick and I were both at different conventions this weekend. Nick, where did you go?
I went to WhatCon in Rockford, Illinois. We're not doing an Abbott and Costello skit.
But what con did you go to, Nick?
For the record, their name is spelled WHAT KHAN. So yes, as in Genghis.
Oh, I was thinking Wrath of.
Yeah, that's.
I was about to say as in Noonien Singh. You know, okay. I was getting there. Anyway, yeah. WhatCon is
Genghis Khan.
Gosh dang it. WhatCon is a con I've been to a couple years back. It is a very fun little gaming con. A lot of older attendees, a lot of people playing war games, some tabletop, a lot of your tabletop stuff is represented. It's never a super busy con, but there are very friendly people. It's really cool. They were back at the at the Loves Park Indoor Sports Center, which... served them well in the past. I'm hoping they're reconsidering that for next year, as since the last time I was there, there was AstroTurf installed in the convention area.
Oh.
And so not only was food and drinks other than water not allowed in the con area, it was really freaking weird to be vending on top of AstroTurf.
Do they smoke grass, Bowie, or
yeah,
do they smoke AstroTurf?
Yeah, it is the Loves Park Indoor Sports Center.
Okay, yeah, well, that's why there's AstroTurf.
There hadn't been in the past. There was the AstroTurf, and was only on the other side of the building.
That sounds like they forgot to put. That sounds like they accidentally put the turf down when they didn't need it.
I don't know.
It was there. A carpet that looks like grass.
It was there. It was awful. I did not like it. Aside from that, a lot of great people, a lot of good fun. That's really all I can say. It's a little Friday, Saturday, Sunday Gaming Con. If you live in the Northern Illinois area and you like tabletop gaming, swing by it next year. They're going by the name Rock Con, like Rockford, Illinois. So, they're going by that name next year. They're put on by the local Pathfinder Society. If you like tabletop gaming, if you're in the area, swing by. You'll probably have some fun.
Cool. Where were you, Fur?
I was at Anime Fusion for about 7 hours this weekend. I went on Saturday, walked in at 10 o'clock, stood in a reg line for 30 minutes, only to find out that my badge was being held by somebody else for me, because they brought me in to host, MC, and entertain the crowd at halftime for the convention, or for the cosplay contest, rather.
No, the whole convention had a like halftime. A
halftime show, yeah. But of course, the big deal for Fusion this year is that they were in a new venue, because the old one, the Thunderbird, was shut down and supposed to have been torn down back in June. But I've been out there recently. That building is still there. Nothing has been done to it.
You don't know if they've been stripping out the insides.
The corpse is just standing there, ripe for pickings. Anime Fusion. What?
Sorry. Amber alert went off on my phone.
Oh, goodness. Hope they find them. The hotel they're at now is the Doubletree at Park Place. Now, when I heard Doubletree originally, I was like, great, another convention at the Doubletree in Bloomington, because that's what we need. But this was actually a really cool hotel. It was one of those places that had the pool in the middle of the space, so it was very humid walking through there. The rooms that they had for the vendor room and artist alley room were very tiny and low ceilinged, which it seemed like their vendor room was cut in half. Like, more than half. It was about a quarter of the size of what last year's was at the Thunderbird. But again, probably space reasons. Because they were also sharing the venue with a wedding party that weekend.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. So, of course, it was a very zoo-like situation, it felt like. A lot of the wedding guests were getting pictures with cosplayers and stuff, which is cool. To an extent, I guess. But no, it was a good convention. Like I said, I wasn't there for too long. It seemed like they filled in their new venue nicely. And it felt like, at least from that Saturday, that they had more attendance than they had in years past. But it also might just be because there's not as spread out as they were at the Thunderbird. So we'll see what official numbers are. But I had a lot of fun for the few hours that I was there. Running hosting the cosplay contest.
Cool.
Yeah.
We should probably move on to the mailbag.
Yeah, we got one letter, I think.
Yeah.
And then the Vomit Hat Steve challenge.
Yeah, Nick.
We got some stuff in the mailbag from Langland, and the subject is Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Oh, dear. Hey, guys. So I am asking for Shiz and Giggles. What comic book villain would you guys like to see adapted into a movie, not a TV show? A movie.
Oh,
I have nothing better to ask, and I don't think you guys want to answer who would win in a fight between a burrito and a corn dog. The correct answer is burrito, so no, I don't want to answer it.
Yeah, burrito's got more skills. I mean, I love corn dogs, but although the corn dog does have a weapon with the stick.
And you're right, Langland. I don't want to answer that question.
So, yeah, tell me what villain you would like to see could be in a movie.
Well, you know, it's... I know he's, like, not a TV show, but I'll tell you, comic book characters work best in, honestly, TV shows, because TV shows format very similar to a comic book, where you've got a self-contained episode then with arcs, and a 22-page comic book, you know, versus, you know, a 44-minute, you know, TV episode kind of break down similarly. But that's, so for a movie, if I was going to say for a movie, which is different than what I would say for a TV show, I'd actually say, like, an accurate version of Zsasz done as just, like, a serial killer, like, thriller, a crime thriller movie with just the Gotham PD and Zsasz.
Yeah.
Like, do something, I guess, Silence of the Lambs-esque with that, you know.
Court of Owls might be good as, like, a trilogy of movies.
I could see that.
Well, I was just thinking about something that would stand alone.
Yeah, I'm not, like, I can't think of anything that's
Dr. Futzing Doom. The real Dr. Doom. Not the crappy hacker Dr. Doom. Not the crappy, I don't even know what the hell that was in the mid-2000s
Lex Luthor.
Movie, Dr. Doom.
it was Lex Luthor with metal skin.
Yes. Not that, not those. Real Dr. Doom. Real weird, trippy as hell Dr. Doom. I mean, okay, if you want to nix the whole part about building a machine to save his mom from hell, okay, I can understand that.
So he builds a machine to save his mom from cancer.
Yeah, he built a machine, blew up in his face, and now he's all wearing armor and has magic and super tech weapons. This is not that out there a concept. He's Marvel Darth Vader. Why do we keep screwing this up?
Because Chronicle. Anyways.
Oh, you know what? I've got an answer. I want to see a swarm movie. Why not? Let's just take two hours of Nazi bees.
Okay.
Make it happen.
All right. So with that, we should move on to the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge.
We should.
The Vomit Hat Steve Challenge is, of course, the part of the show where I read a line from a book, and the challenge to you, the listener, is to guess what book it is from. If you guess correctly, you get included in the Hall of Awesome, which the benefits are small but easy to remember. You get listed on our website in the Hall of Awesome, and we read your name aloud at this point in the program. And the current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Arkhamite, Zero, Rin and Ascenti, Cheesy McDamia, Krista, Slithery D, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings, Van Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lilisaurus, Paper Godzilla, Cavsey, The Minnesota Librarians, and Sean Orange. And now we will continue our venture into literature with the current line from the book we're currently doing, which I'm going to find a good one here. Oh, let's find something not too obvious. All right, here is your line. A tightrope was strung across the sky, and a great many people were walking on it. If you know what book that is from, go to nerdandtie.com/contact and tell us. Fill out the form. Give us your information. Or if you have anything else you would like to tell us and read aloud on the show in our mailbag section, go there too. Tell us your dreams, your hopes, your nightmares, what you think Fur should do with his hair next. I'm thinking reverse mohawk. It's,
you know, honestly, it can be like anything. My stylist just said anything from the 80s I go in and throw down and we're not allowed to do.
Yeah, so I'm thinking no hawk, but sideways mohawk. But
yeah,
anyways, just give us your information, and we will be your best friends forever.
And as always, feel free to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, all that good stuff. Rate, review us, let us know what you think. Guys, Walking Dead Season 7? Are we up to 7?
Yes.
Walking Dead Season 7 starts in 3 minutes on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. So we are going to let you guys go so that Trey can go watch that. I will have to catch
mind
it
you,
tomorrow.
You're listening to this Monday morning when I upload it. So, you know.
So you guys might have already seen that, in which case.
I don't know who Negan killed yet. I need to go find out.
We'll find out tomorrow.
Who were we
for? Maybe about. Well, actually, you know what? Honestly, they're probably going to wait till the end of the episode to tell us, as they always do. But as always, I am Firsters.
I'm Trey Dorn.
I'm Nick Izumi.
Have a great night, everybody. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Keep on smacking in the free world.
That's my line.
That's right, motherfucker.
Oh, my God. No.
Everything is terrible. Except for when it's not. And Merry Halloween.
Yeah, happy Halloween, everybody.